So my name is Lon McQuillan. I'm a primary care research fellow at the University of Colorado in the Children's Hospital. I've got the requisite picture of the mountains in Colorado here, changed up from some of the other Colorado presentations because I didn't want to bore you. So today I'm going to present some data from a survey we did actually late last spring, early last summer, where we looked at influenza vaccine delay from the primary care physician's perspective. So first of all, I don't have any financial disclosures to make. So this survey was done through the Vaccine Policy Collaborative Initiative, which is a collaboration between the CDC and the University of Colorado Denver. The principal investigator on the study is Dr. Allison Kemp, and we've got several CDC collaborators, but Shannon Stokely and Pascal Wortley are the two we primarily worked with on this survey. So a little bit of background about influenza first off. Influenza is the most common vaccine-preventable disease in the United States. It causes about 36,000 annual deaths and 226,000 annual hospitalizations in the U.S. And vaccination is really the primary means we have to prevent influenza and its complications. So yearly vaccination, as you all know, is recommended in high-risk groups, which used to be 6 to 59 months of age. Now that's expanded, obviously, as of a few weeks ago, to 6 months to 18 years of age, and also adults older than 50. Pregnant women, people of any age with certain chronic medical conditions, and caregivers of kids in high-risk groups as well. So as we've heard alluded to, there have been frequent vaccine supply problems over the past several years. Most notably have been the big shortages, particularly the 2004-2005 shortage. But there have also been several years where there have been manufacturing problems which have caused delayed receipt of vaccine by practitioners. There are some gaps in the literature regarding vaccine supply problems. First off, prior analyses have tended to focus on shortage seasons such as the 2004-05 season. And really little is known about the extent of delays and their impact on practice during those non-shortage seasons. And we know very little as well about provider expectations about the timing of influenza vaccine arrival and what they define as vaccine delay. So our study objectives, to describe among primary care physicians nationally in 2006-2007, a non-shortage season. First, what are the perceptions regarding what constitutes a vaccine delay? Secondly, what is the extent of vaccine delays by physician report? And thirdly, what are the impacts of those delays on practice? So as I said, this was a national survey. We did it among pediatricians, family physicians, and general internal medicine physicians. We did the survey in three sentinel physician networks that we developed as part of the Vaccine Policy Collaborative Initiative. Each of the three was designed to be representative of one of the memberships of the professional societies, so the AAP, AAFP, and ACP. We did a prior study in a prior flu season that showed that random AMA samples and these sentinel networks were similar in practice characteristics, provider demographics, and also attitudes about flu vaccine shortages. And that actually was just published this month. So before administering the survey, we did pre-tested in three national community advisory panels. And then we pilot tested the survey in a national sample of primary care physicians. So the survey was conducted March to June of last year. We used mixed methods, so depending on provider preference, when they joined the network, we administered it via email or mail. So results. So our overall response rate was 74%. Response rates were fairly similar between the specialties, you can see. And our final N was 940 respondents. We did exclude providers from vaccine delay analyses that didn't administer flu vaccine during that season, which were fairly small percentages in our sample, 1% of pediatricians, 3% of FPs, and 4% of internists. And then we also excluded providers that didn't practice at least 50% primary care. So respondents versus non-respondents, there were a couple of differences between respondents and non-respondents among pediatricians. So female pediatricians were less likely to respond, and also younger pediatricians were less likely to respond, but otherwise, practice setting, location, and region were similar. Among family physicians and internists, there weren't differences between respondents and non-respondents. So this is the attention span graph slash chart mark, so I think we're getting there now. All right, so our first chart. So our first objective, what are the perceptions regarding what constitutes a vaccine delay, a flu vaccine delay? So the majority of the responses to our survey were similar between specialties. There were subtle differences, though, between specialties here. So I've shown this by specialty. Family physicians and pediatricians were fairly similar. You can see there the yellow and the green bars. Internists, the blue bars, did expect vaccine a little bit earlier than FPs and pediatricians. Here's the percentages if you're interested. It's a little busy, so I left them off the first. So this is the three specialties pooled together. So you can see that the plurality of respondents felt that not having received vaccine on or before November 1st felt that was a vaccine delay, followed by October 15th. And so to summarize, 78% of respondents felt that if they hadn't received vaccine on or before November 1st, vaccine was delayed. So our second objective was, what are the extent of vaccine delays by physician report? So 53% of respondents reported vaccine delays. We were also interested to hear how providers felt about the communication they got from vaccine suppliers regarding the delay. And so we asked a series of satisfaction questions. And about two-thirds were dissatisfied with the communication they got from the supplier regarding the delay. So what are the factors associated with vaccine delay or the report of experiencing a vaccine delay? So first of all, pediatricians were more likely to report a vaccine delay, with two-thirds reporting delays. Managed care providers were much less likely to report delays. In fact, zero reported delays this year. Providers participating in VFC were more likely to experience delays. And during this season, 0607, Midwestern and Western physicians were less likely to report experiencing a delay. Interestingly, we asked if providers perceived that retailers in their area received vaccine before their practice, and providers who responded yes were much more likely to report experiencing a delay. Oh, and lastly, we also compared practice size between providers reporting delays and providers not reporting delays. And there was a statistically significant difference. Median practice size was 5 among those experiencing delays and 6 not. So the third objective of our study was to assess the impacts of vaccine delays on practice. So we approached this in two different ways. We did bivariate analyses looking for the association between reporting a delay and potential impacts of delays. And then we also asked a series of Likert-type scalar questions regarding the impacts of flu vaccine delays. So first off, these are the bivariate analyses. So the first question, did you meet demand for vaccine in your practice? Among providers experiencing a vaccine delay, 59% said yes, they met demand, while 94% of those not experiencing a delay met demand for vaccine in their practice. We also asked what percentage of patients were referred elsewhere for vaccination. 68% of those with delayed vaccine referred more than 10% of their patients elsewhere, while just 20% of those not experiencing a delay referred greater than 10% elsewhere. The next question we asked was unused vaccine. So we actually dichotomized it. So people reporting they had between 0 and 9% vaccine remaining, and those reporting 10% and above. And there was a significant difference. Those with vaccine delay, 33% reported having more than 10% unused vaccine at the end of the season, as compared to 24% of those not experiencing a delay or reporting experiencing a delay. So we also asked if by the end of the season they had received their entire initial order of vaccine, and there was a difference here as well. 27% of those with vaccine delays did not eventually receive their entire order, as compared to just 3% of those without delays. So the second part of our assessment of impacts on practice. So as I said, we asked a series of questions with scaled answers regarding potential impacts of delays. And what I'm showing you here is the percent of respondents feeling that vaccine delays have either somewhat of an effect or a large effect on each of these potential impacts. In yellow, the yellow bars represent the proportion selecting somewhat of an effect, and the blue bars represent the proportion selecting a large effect. So you can see the most frequently selected was the reduction of parental and patient satisfaction, followed by reduced vaccination rates, increased need for patient referral, the interference with flu shot clinics, and also the negative financial impact of unused vaccine. So there are some important limitations that we should note. These data are all based on self-report, so we don't necessarily know if reports of delays, vaccine arrival, et cetera, are accurate. This is a really select group of respondents. So these are providers who agreed to participate in these Sentinel networks. I did, however, mention the prior study showing that demographics and attitudes regarding flu shortages are similar between random AMA samples and these networks. There could also be some recall bias. We did administer the survey immediately following the flu season. But there could be some recall bias as well, particularly regarding things happening early in the season. So lastly, our conclusions. So first of all, there's a great deal of variation in when providers consider vaccine to be delayed. Secondly, the majority of providers did report experiencing a delay, even in a non-shortage season. And most of these providers were dissatisfied with communication they got about the delay. Experiencing a vaccine delay may also increase the risk of having unused, unreturnable vaccine. And lastly, providers may need to adjust expectations and practice as these supply problems are likely to recur. Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
I'm L.J. Fagnan. I'm a family physician that works with docs in rural Oregon, and I'm glad this is being taped because this is a pretty emotional issue for a lot of primary care providers. They're feeling very unsupported in terms of their ability to be a medical home and practice population-based medicine. And I just wonder what can happen from an infrastructure standpoint to kind of move them up the list, because most of us, we tell our patients, well, why don't you come back the end of October or the 1st of November? We actually try to time these visits in the fall for them to come back. And I'm finding increasingly I'm failing to deliver the service when they show up in the fall. And just one of my clinicians said here, and I just want to share this quote. He says, influenza is an embarrassment to the system because we order every year. We cannot get it. Yet the grocery stores, we have to send our patients to the grocery store. It's horrendous. The elderly that hardly get out, we should be able to give them an immunization. For God's sake, we should be able to give them an immunizations in our office, and we're the last people on the priority list to get them. And that's kind of the sense that the people that I work with feel about that. And so the information is not getting to the docs saying, when are you going to get your vaccine? Because we do plan these visits a long way out, and we're failing to deliver. And then pretty soon our patients get different cares, patterns of care established, where they say, well, gee, I used to go to the doc's office in the fall and get that, but it's easier. I can count on the pharmacy to get it, so I think I'll start showing up there. And so it represents a missed opportunity for a lot of preventive services that we deliver. It's not just immunizations. And so I just wanted to provide provide those comments and just kind of wonder if there's any plans in the infrastructure to put primary care physicians up a little higher on the priority list.
Thank you for this comment. Well, I'm really not prepared to give a detailed response, but what I can say that Immunization Services Division set up a surveillance system, and we follow up the distribution of influenza vaccine throughout the country, and the name of the system is Flu Finder. And actually, if somebody, Lisa Galloway and Jeannie Santoli are two main persons who are in charge, and what we see that every year we have an increased total amount of doses delivered by zip code. Unfortunately, we cannot follow down in the surveillance system to the every practice private or public setting. On the other hand, I also wanted to comment, it relates to the first and second presentation, that we have manufacturers, they promise us that they have the capacity of producing more vaccine. However, when I'm thinking just from a individual when I'm thinking from the programmatic perspective, the more vaccine you produce, you have to package, you have to find a transportation, and then in the end side of the receiving point, you need staff to store the vaccine and to physically administer. So probably the more vaccine we'll have produced, we may have delays reported, probably often, and maybe the system works and it improves. However, just the relative number of vaccine produced and vaccine delayed probably will increase. Thank you.
Drew Bernstein again from Maryland. I'm fascinated by this subject because when I was in practice, we had a fairly large practice, and maybe that's why, because some of that data seems to show that the larger the practice, the less the perceived delay and the impact on vaccine, unused vaccine. However, and we had electronic medical records, and we used a registry, and it was a really, as much as it possibly can be, because it's an imperfect science, it was really a concerted effort to try to get a handle on what to order. But I was intrigued by the number on one of your slides that showed that 2/3 of the physicians reported unused vaccine were less than 10%. And from my perspective, that's exactly where you want to be. I mean, you don't want to underestimate the demand.
Right.
And so I'm curious whether either of you, because it's worthwhile to sort of explore this, ask what the survey responders think is an acceptable level of unused vaccine at the end of the season. It should not be zero.
Yeah, we didn't ask that question, but we thought a lot about how to analyze the unused vaccine component, and that's why we chose more than 10%. We figured that was probably more than you want to have left over, but you know the ideal number of doses to have left over is one or you know a couple of doses, so some small number is ideal. But we didn't ask providers that.
I'm just writing that question down because as additional surveys go out, I think that's a very important component there. I just wanted to pick up on one thing that Dr. Fagnan had said here about his rural clinicians in Oregon. One thing that we experienced across the northern tier so often that we picked up from some of our clinicians is that you order vaccine for your older patients, and they're, especially the people who are more mobile, oftentimes by mid-November, Thanksgiving at the latest, are heading south for the wintertime. And so if you're planning to immunize that group, it's not a large component, but it is a measurable minority of older people that are getting away from our long, cold winters and going someplace warmer and sunnier. But that really makes an issue, too, because ideally you would like to immunize that person prior to any travel as well during that time of year. The other thing I want to just point out, though, that we I'll be very kind to Lon here, but I think both of us are very, very susceptible to the influenza years in which we're dealing with. This year was I would call a moderate year. The previous 2 years were very, very mild. And if we have a moderate year, our perceptions are a bad year, our perceptions are going to be influenced very much differently than if we have a very, very mild year. And so I think we have to kind of keep that in mind. And this is an ever-changing target that's really, really hard to define well. Question here.
Hi, I'm Allison Kim from University of Colorado. And I don't have a question. I just want to comment on the issue. You know, a lot of this theme about prioritization of receipt of vaccine is something that we've been conducting these flu surveys every year. It comes up every year, and it's becoming more and more prominent in terms of, is preference given to pharmacies? Is preference given to large distributors of vaccine? And it's interesting because the CDC claims to have data refuting this, but I have to say that I think the data is really inadequate because what's happening is very complicated, and there's so many distributors, and nobody knows exactly what's happening at the distribution level, which is what the providers feel. So I think it's important that, you know, I think it's important that nobody get defensive about these issues. The truth is there are problems, and we need to pay attention to the primary care doc's problems and not get defensive about it. There are clearly problems with prioritization of distribution, and we hear it universally. So I think we should deal with it.
I'm Pat Montoya, and I'm with the New Mexico Quality Improvement Organization. And we happen to hold the contract from the Department of Health for the New Mexico Vaccine Immunization Consortium, which was a consortium started back when we were dealing with the shortages to have an idea of what was happening in the state regarding vaccine, where it was at, how we could get it redistributed as we needed, that type of thing. And I have to tell you that it is very challenging, and as was just mentioned about the find, you know, or how much is in the state. I had been the Secretary of Health in the state, so I had run the department. But now, working with where I'm at now, with this contract, I've been trying to work with the department because one of the real disconnects I'm finding is that we're not. It goes according to zip code. So the department can tell me, CDC says this much was distributed in our state, and this much went to the zip codes. But when we're trying to figure out, because what we've started is on a website trying to get people to report what they ordered, what they received, and what they've given. That's been a little slow in the uptake. Again, it's an additional step that we're asking folks. But like this year, we just have not been able to get a feel, and there is a disconnect somewhere between what's being delivered in the state, and I don't know if it's something that maybe CDC could run interference with the distributors or the manufacturers. The manufacturers are at the table with us. We tried to reach out to the distributors this last season, and we still cannot pinpoint what's happening. In a state like ours, we have the FQHCs in the rural areas. They can tell us what they got. But with our rural docs, it's really hard to identify what's happening in primary care. And there are caregivers in those places. And, you know, again, in rural states, the challenge of, again, going to the Walgreens or your food store to get it, that's great if you're in an urban city. But if you're in a small town, it is the practitioner. It is the medical home where it goes, and we're, you know, I just keep saying this isn't rocket science. Why do we not know what's come in, where it's at, and how we can distribute? What we have found helpful is that we have a listserv, and so therefore, when some folks were running out this year, they, you know, sent us, they contacted us and said, we need some flu vaccine, and we put it on the listserv. Such and such a practice or this clinic or somebody needs it. Do you have any? So that we could redistribute. But I don't know, there's somewhere a missing link that we're not able to better pinpoint where that vaccine is and how we can get it redistributed as needed.
Thank you. I'll take your comments back to the division. We'll discuss this. Thank you.
I just have one other comment. There is a way that we measure where people do get their flu shots. The Behavioral Risk Factor Survey does look at, they ask, in some states, not all states, but you can get data on people who got flu shots, and then they ask them sort of a broad category. And I think if it serves the, you know, the family practitioner well, that still the majority of people who get their flu shots, I haven't seen the data for this year yet, but the majority of them still do get their flu shots at their, what they consider to be their family doctor or their physician's office. So I don't know whether with the increase in numbers of places where people are able to get, like the CVSs, the grocery stores, whether that number will start changing. But it is true that most of them still are getting their flu shots at the family practitioner level. And there should be more support for family practitioners to get vaccine to be able to continue that practice.
Just had a quick follow-up question for either Lon or for Dr. Campy, and it deals with just, have you looked at the level of physician or clinician satisfaction around the whole vaccine enterprise through the series of surveys you've done? I get the sense there's kind of a global frustration, but if you're able to comment on that a little bit more.
You mean specifically around flu?
Either around influenza or for other vaccines, as we've had a number of delays, shortages, and so on going on.
You know, we get a lot of frustration, a lot of written-in comments. But it's interesting, as your survey demonstrated, people continue to say they're going to try to give flu. So it's sort of, yes, we'll continue to do it, but there's a lot of frustration. Mostly, I mean, there are some practices that have clearly gone out of business about this issue. It's so serious. I mean, they've lost huge amounts of money. Those are certainly the minority, but a lot of frustration predominantly about the financial issues, the inability to plan, the frustration with the embarrassment of not being able to deliver care to their patients when Safeway can and got it a month ago. And, you know, I think this is the problem. It's hard for me to ignore and say these things are really not happening when the majority of these physicians are reporting it. So I think, you know, something has happened at the distribution level that's very frustrating for a lot of docs, you know.
In my turn, I would like to just comment. I have two observations. First, I think in one of the presentations, we saw that 78% of physicians who did not receive the vaccine by November 1, they think that the vaccine was delayed. We try, and because of the increasing amount of the vaccine produced and distributed, we try to work with the communication and educational units in order to try to extend the perceived season for administering influenza vaccine. I know that this will be probably another way to address these problems, to extend the season of vaccine administration. And I also had, I have another observation about the response bias. Of course, there are, I understand, and we all realize at CDC that there are problems with the distribution, and we try to address these issues. Probably we can also think that those unsatisfied providers who did not get the vaccine or who had the feeling that the vaccine was delayed much longer than they would want, they respond to the surveys because they want to say something about this. They want to communicate the message of unsatisfaction, and we are grateful for those who respond and who let us know that there is an issue. So these are all interesting things to consider, and at Immunization Services Division, as I also mentioned, we, even when we know that there will be enough vaccine manufactured, we know that we will have crisis again. So we are ready when September comes, we are ready to face the crisis, even if we know that we are prepared and we have everything set up. There are always some unexpected issues, and I think it's manufacturers, they think the same way probably. They think they're ready. They have a big chance that they will have some issues during the season. So all these are criteria. They make this a big critical and very important aspect of influenza immunization programs.
Hi, I hate to be so dominant here, but I just want to make one more comment. I think we're not talking about the big elephant in the room, which is that CDC cannot control these issues. CDC is not at fault here. This is a market system. We have incentives that are driving things in a way that is not productive for patients sometimes. And I think often CDC gets very, you know, they get very defensive. We can't fix this. Well, you're right. They can't fix it. We have a problem. Some of the distribution problems, you have absolutely no control over. It doesn't mean, though, that we should put our head in the sand and not try to solve those problems. I think that's the point. And, you know, I hate to espouse radical ideas here, but some of us don't think influenza should be delivered in the market system. But if it's going to be, then we need more cooperation, and it has to be voluntary cooperation in the market system from distributors. We have to have transparent distribution and redistribution. So I think the point to remember is the CDC is not on the line here. It's the whole system, and I think we have to think outside the box and develop more innovative, collaborative ways of doing this better.
Sure. Thank you. Any last-minute comments, suggestions, or remarks?